So I remember learning to rappel when I was in scouts. You know, rappelling with the thing and the jumping and the rope. And there was this giant tower at summer camp. This thing was like 4 or 5 stories tall. And there was a staircase that wound its way up through the middle. And they would have us all climb these stairs till we got to the top. And when they got there, they'd put you in a harness, connect everything, and then they just ask you to lean backwards into the nothingness. I was so excited to go rappelling. I mean, I had been looking forward to it for several years. I was so excited. I mean, the younger kids only got to watch, and you finally hit that age, and now it's your turn. I was so excited about rappelling until I got to the top. Then they put the harness on me, and they said, go ahead, lean into the nothingness. And I was like, no. As soon as I got to the top, I was overcome with questions and worries and doubts and outright fear. The camp leader was up there, looked at me, and he said, I've got you. Oh, such reassuring words, if I could have believed them. Because he kept saying, I've got you. And every time he'd say that, I'd respond with, but what about? I've got you. But what about the harness? They seem like a lot of people. Is it fit right? Brad, I've got you. Yeah, but what about the carabiner? This thing seems pretty small. I've got you. But what about the rope? What is the last time you checked these? The anchors? I mean, like, are those inspected? But what about? No matter how many times he would say, I've got you, I had another but what about waiting. This is, to me, far too true of our human condition. Not about rappelling, but about life. Think about our relationships, our own value of ourselves, our self-worth and self-confidence, the decisions that we make, all of the day-to-day stuff that leaves us worrying. Amidst all of that, amidst all of life, God says, I've got you. I mean, think about it. Like in Genesis, after every step of creation in this beautiful world, including us, God looks and says, it is good. Or in Jeremiah, when God says, I know the plans I have for you, and they are plans to give you a future with hope. Or in the Psalms, when we're reminded that God shepherds over us, tending to every need, verse after verse, page after page, relationship after relationship, God continually claims humanity, saying, I've got you. And yet, generation after generation, humanity continues to respond, yeah, but what about? We question ourselves and our worth. Yeah, God, but what about my failures? We question the decisions we've made. Okay, God, but what about all the things that could have been? We have anxiety about change. Okay, God, but what about keeping things the way they are? We carry uncertainty about people and experiences that are different. Yeah, God, but we don't know everything about them. The questions, the worries, the anxieties, whatever word you put on it, all of these are different expressions of fear that we carry. And we do use all sorts of different words and phrases to try to mask our fear. Because honestly, I'm still warming to the idea. Sounds a lot better than I'm afraid of it. We as people have a tendency, if not an outright human condition, toward fear. And God knows this. It's funny, every time God sends a messenger to earth, the first thing they say is, do not be afraid. I always used to think this was because angels are like some sort of scary being. No, it's just because pretty much every person on the planet is scared, and that's what God has to say to everybody. Do not be afraid. Now let's talk about some other things. This often gets brought up at Christmas because that do not be afraid line is in so many of those beautiful stories of Jesus' birth and arrival. But I don't know if you know this. You hear the phrase, do not be afraid, just as much in the Easter story. Listen to the author of Matthew tell us the Easter story here. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, okay, how would you like to be that lady, right? Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to look at the tomb. As they were there, there was a great earthquake, and an angel of the Lord came down from heaven. Coming to the very stone, the angel rolled it away and sat upon it. Now the angel's face was like lightning, his clothes as white as snow. The guards were so terrified that they shook with fear and fell over as if they were dead. But the angel said to the women, do not be afraid. I know that you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He isn't here because he's been raised from the dead, just as he said. Come here. See the place where they laid him? Nothing. He's gone on ahead of you to Galilee. Now hurry, go and tell the disciples. Tell the disciples that Jesus has been raised from the dead. Tell them that Jesus has gone on to Galilee and they will see him there. This is the message I'm giving you to give to them. With great fear and excitement, the women hurried away from the room, running to tell the disciples. As they were on their way, Jesus met them on the road, greeting the women. Jesus said, "Do not be afraid. Go, tell my disciples that I am going into Galilee, and they will see me there." This is a story of fear. Do not be afraid, we hear over and over. I mean, the guards are afraid. They've got weapons, they've got training, and none of it's adequate in these circumstances. I don't think that was a part of the Roman soldier training, angel dealing. The women, they were afraid. I mean, first off, someone had taken Jesus, they figured. Right? That's a fearful moment. But then, no, he wasn't taken. He's just come back from the dead. Oh, that's a lot less to be afraid of. And then they get this message to go tell people that Jesus is back from the dead. Like, that's a comfortable thing. You want us to go tell them what? Okay, yeah, because they're going to believe us. Now, if we could just for a moment give the ladies a shout out here. Because they had a lot more to be afraid of than the guards, and they were still functional. The guys with the training, the armor, and the swords, laying on the ground, scared to move. But the women, they're taking care of things here. Now, the fears that these women were experiencing, they're bigger than an angel, a rock, or an empty tomb. You see, the story as we read it this morning picks up on Sunday morning, this Easter morning like ours, but to really understand the questions and worries and anxieties in their hearts, to understand the fear of that morning, we've got to go back a few days. 3 days, to be precise. 3 days ago, Jesus died. And with him died the hopes, the expectations, the dreams of countless people who believed that God was doing something new. And with Jesus' death, that something new was ended. These women who are coming to the tomb, they're carrying all of that anxiety and fear of what's next in their hearts. Do you realize these women are coming to stare at a rock and be reminded that hope was gone? In some of the Gospels, we find that they were maybe bringing spices or there to tend to the body. But in the Gospel of Matthew, the tomb is sealed. They're just there to stare at the rock because they are so struck with loss, there's nothing else to do. They didn't know which end was up. They didn't know Jesus was going to be alive. There wasn't a, hey, other Mary, do you want to go see if Jesus is alive? Let's go see what happened. There's none of that. They don't come to Easter service every year and hear the same story. They have no clue. These women and so many others saw everything turn to fear on that Friday. Because before that day, before Jesus was on that cross, they had really believed when Jesus said, "I've got you," they believed it. I mean, think about it. The stories he told, the healing he performed, the teaching he offered. He was looking at everyone and saying, "I've got you." Jesus was so intentional about being inclusive and bringing relationship to those often left out, saying to them, "I've got you." Jesus had been saying, "I've got you," over and over and over, and these people believed him. And then the world took it away. Now, some of the more cynical people in the group had warned all of the disciples about this. Every time those cynical people heard Jesus say, "I've got you," they would say, "Ah, but what about the Roman Empire?" Jesus would say, "I've got you," and they'd say, "Yeah, but what about the religious establishment?" There were so many "but whatabouts" with Jesus' life and ministry. And right as these women who had believed that "I've got you" were getting ready to lean out into the unknown, they found themselves untethered, alone, and scared. And that's exactly how the religious institutions and the political institutions wanted it. Religious and political institutions love when people are afraid. The political and religious institutions of Jesus' day played on people's fear. They were able to control people. They were able to get what they wanted anytime they could make a large group of people fear economic ruin. They could push their own agenda anytime they could get people to fear folks from other countries. They could get exactly what they wanted and do what they wanted with the world anytime they could get people to fear folks of other religions. That's what they were doing. Don't they still? By killing Jesus, they thought they were killing opposition to their campaigns and their dogma. Power structures love fear when it'll keep people in line. Candidates for elected office appreciate that fear can swing a vote or two or a thousand. This is as real now as it was 2,000 years ago. Fear is used as a tool, a weapon, a form of leverage to guide and shape institutions, communities, people, and the decisions that we make. And this has to stop. Jesus believed so. I believe so. And I pray that you believe so as well. Jesus didn't just believe it needed to stop. Jesus had been actively working to change the climate of fear. And so they killed him. They killed him to prove that his "I've got you" had limits, and they were there to put those limits in place. You see, when "I've got you" has limits, fear wins. And that's what Easter is about proving. Easter is about proving that all those "but whatabouts" and all of those limits are wrong. See, back on that rappelling tower at scout camp, there I was quivering at the center of the platform, as far away from the edge as possible, holding on for dear life, really. I was scared to go over the edge into the nothingness, but I was also scared to have to walk back down the stairs and tell everyone I was too scared to do it. I was petrified. And my list of "but whatabouts," my list of limits, had gotten really, really long. Oh, but what about the wind? What about the weathering of the platform? What's the structural integrity of this wood? I mean, literally, I was worried about everything. So this camp leader, he smiles at me, and suddenly he shouts, "Hey, Hank, come here." From the other side of the platform, I see movement. And then suddenly, I feel movement. The tower is shifting. "See? What about the tower? It seems to be moving." Hank comes over, and the camp leader looks at me, and the camp leader says, "Hey, Brad, what do you weigh?" And I responded, "About 87 pounds. I was a really stringy, slim jean-wearing kind of kid. Then he looks and he goes, "Hey, Hank, what do you weigh?" And Hank responds, "I like to keep it under 300. The guy saying this is not only 8 years older than I am, but certainly the captain of a wrestling team somewhere. Hank clips in, looks at the camp leader, and says, "You got me?" And as soon as that camp leader says, "I've got you, Hank," he takes a flying leap off of the tower. The whole tower is swaying like a sapling in the breeze. The rope starts zipping. My eyes are bigger than my head. And all of a sudden, from somewhere halfway down the tower, I hear Hank yell, "How you doing up there?" And the camp leader smiles. And instead of hollering to Hank, he looks right at me as he answers. And he says, "I've got you." I didn't have any more "but whatabouts" after that. What I had instead was my first rappelling experience, and it was awesome. Because if my camp leader could handle Hank, my camp leader could handle me. If my camp leader could handle Hank, my camp leader could handle anything. You see, Easter is about God saying, "I've got you," in a way that doesn't have limits. Each and every time, generation after generation, God always kept finding new ways to say, "I've got you," and humanity would simply pull out another limit and say, "Yeah, God, but what about this?" So God wanted to find the most extreme boundary, the heaviest example possible, to prove the extremes to which the divine "I've got you" could go. And there is no bigger human boundary, no more extreme human fear than death. And if God can handle death, God can handle us. And if God can handle death, God can handle anything. You see, on Easter morning, after the world shook and swayed with Jesus taking that flying leap into death, we hear the voice of Jesus from somewhere out there asking, "How you doing?" And God looks right at us and says, "I've got you. Do not be afraid." Happy Easter. Amen.